So thank you for the invitation to come and speak. So I'm going to be talking about, I'll apologize for my voice. I had a cold over the weekend. I'm better now, but the voice is still a bit rough. But I'm going to be talking about cuprate superconductors and experiments in cuprate superconductors. So it's a great pleasure to give an experimental talk in this esteemed house of theory. So the work I'm going to be talking about is charge density wave order in cuprate superconductors, which has recently been central to a flurry of activity in the cuprates, which I think is a very, very exciting development. So the work I'm going to talk about is part of a large collaboration. So some of the work I'm going to focus on is work out of my own group and mostly work of graduate student Andrew Ashkar, my first graduate student. So there's some theory collaborators, Roger Melko and Lauren Hayward in the back. Samples are coming from the University of British Columbia. I'll also talk about some samples from U of T. And experiments, most of the work I'm going to talk about is done at the Canadian Light Source, but we're also involved in collaborations with other places, including some collaboration with the Keimer Group and the Zsirengeli-Brekovich Group, Jochen Geck in Dresden, and then some very, very exciting and important theory work with Sabir. So he might talk about this at his colloquium on Thursday, I imagine, and I'll just briefly discuss what we've done with Sabir. Okay, so outline, I'll talk about CDW order and cuprates, resonant scattering of oxygen-ordered samples of YBCO, doping dependence of the charge density wave order, competitions, this is the theory work with Sabir, competition between superconductivity and CDW order, and then finally, if I have time, I'll discuss what we learn about the microscopic character of charge density wave order in the cuprates from this resonant scattering technique, so this novel X-ray scattering tool that we have. All right, so a brief intro to cuprate superconductors. So there's many experts in the audience. I don't have to spend too much time on this. But basically, these materials, famous materials, have a layered structure where a lot of the action is in copper-oxygen planes, so square lattice of copper and oxygen, giving you a quasi-2D system separated by some spacer layers. That composition of these spacer layers can be varied to dope holes or electrons into the copper oxide planes. In terms of the electronic structure, the basic elements of the electronic structure are some copper dx squared minus y squared orbitals and some oxygen px and py orbitals. And I'd say a three-band minimal model is sort of what we need to describe a lot of the things I'm going to be talking about. When we vary strontium for lanthanum in this material, we can move the samples through this doping phase diagram. We can vary the carrier concentration, and at the underdoped sample, you get an anti-ferromagnetic mod insulator that is rapidly suppressed with doping and gives way to this rich phase diagram with unconventional D-wave superconductor at around a doping of 0.6 or it's optimal. And in addition, there's these mysterious phases that are sometimes labeled the strange metal above optimal doping, and then the pseudo-gap phase, which is a hotly debated phase. Still many, many years after its discovery, people are still debating the basic character and nature of this pseudo-gap phase. But when you get to higher doping, you get to what seems like a more conventional phase, a Fermi liquid, which we mostly understand. Okay, so in this exciting phase diagram, there's a tendency in the underdoped region for some charge and spin order to develop. And this was first found as static order in 1995 in some seminal measurements by John Tronquata, where in this compound here, lanthanum, neodymium, strontium, copper oxide, they found with elastic neutron scattering evidence for some superlattice peaks indicating some charge density wave order and some associated spin density wave order. And the picture that they, a cartoon picture of this order is a stripe-like order where the holes segregate into these rivers of charge. So this cartoon picture has a half-filled charge stripe separating undoped regions that order antiferromagnetically. And these charge stripes then form an antiphase domain wall between your anti-ferromagnetic regions. And that picture would give rise to these Bragg peaks with these specific Q vectors or positions in reciprocal space. This order is also somewhat short range, so these peaks are rather broad, giving you a correlation length of maybe about 70 angstroms or so in this sample. So this has been reasonably well studied in these lanthanum-based cuprates, and some of the basic character of the CDW and charge density wave order in the lanthanum-based cuprates is it seems to be unidirectional, so stripe-like. It has a sort of an optimal period, approximately four times the lattice constant, and it seems to be associated with a dramatic dip in the superconducting transition temperature. So where the charge order is most pronounced and has the largest signal coincides with this special doping of 1/8, where superconductivity in green almost goes to a minimum in this compound, lanthanum barium copper oxide. So already some indication of a competition between superconductivity and the spin and charge order. And then importantly, in these lanthanum-based cuprates, this spin and charge order really seems to be stabilized or associated with a structural distortion in the material, this so-called LTT, low temperature tetragonal phase, where the copper oxygen octahedra tilt. So this is where things stood for a long time. This is what we knew about charge and spin density wave order in the cuprates. And I think for a lot of people, they really didn't necessarily want to make too much of this stripe picture because it was really only found in this one family of the cuprates. And we didn't know whether this was just some oddity associated with a structural phase transition in these materials or whether it had something to do with cation disorder in these materials or generally a low TC. So we didn't know if this was a generic property to the cuprates. That started to change in the 2000s with some tunneling spectroscopy measurements, and there was a range of tunneling measurements by Seamus's Davis's group and the Yazdani group and others. And what they found is with various tunneling techniques, they could find in different materials, so this one's sodium-doped copper oxygen, sodium, calcium, copper, chloride, whatever. And dysprosium-doped bisco, they found this sort of checkerboard-like state, again with about a period four structure and a very short-range order. And there was a hint that this might be related to the stripes in the lanthanum-based cuprates. A big question, though, was whether there was charge density wave order in more pristine materials like yttrium barium copper oxide, which is sort of one of our classic paradigm cuprate materials. So this material is a bilayer cuprate, so it has a pair of copper oxygen planes in the unit cell, has an orthorhombic structure generally where the A, B, and C lattice constants are different. And the doping in this material is in the so-called chain layer where you can intercalate oxygen in this chain layer and that dopes holes into the copper oxide planes, letting you traverse the doping phase diagram. Generally, because the dopants are further from the copper oxygen planes than the cations of the lanthanum-based cuprates, this seems to have lower levels of disorder. And moreover, we can somewhat order the oxygen in the copper oxide planes to further reduce the level of disorder. And as a consequence, these materials have some of the lowest scattering rates of all of the cuprate materials. Also has a reasonably high superconducting transition temperature of maximum around 94.2 Kelvin. So this was finding charge order in this material would be very exciting. So this was, there was some indirect evidence that this really might occur, and that came from some quantum oscillations experiments of the Ty Fair group. So what they found is a mysterious electron pocket in quantum oscillations experiments, and that's not what we would have expected. So originally you would have expected a hole-like Fermi surface in the cuprates, which is what various calculations would give you, and what Angrozov photo emission seemed to indicate. But these quantum oscillations were indicating some electron-like Fermi surface, and one way to achieve that would be to have a reconstruction of the Fermi surface caused by some translational symmetry breaking. So this was highlighted by many groups. around the time of these quantum oscillations coming around. We subsequently searched for charge order in YBCO and initially didn't find it. Other groups in NQR were, I'd say, the first to find more direct evidence for charge order.
Yeah, I have a question for the last one, frankly. That's a, as you can see here, when you have a charge order, the TC is not dropped down to zero.
No, but there's a dip here.
Yeah, but it's not like a length example.
No.
I don't know whether there's an understanding. So what I'm trying to say is that whether one can say because concentration are different, so maybe some region you don't have charge order, which is superconductor, some region have charge order, which is not superconductor, or really it is coexistence of a charge order and superconductivity.
I'll get to that later on. We can discuss that later on. But I think there's some sort of coexistence, is what I'd say. Okay. But generally, many of the features of the generic cuprate phase diagram aren't all that generic, okay? So different cuprates, there's a different suppression around a 1/8. And in different families of the cuprates, the onset of superconductivity at low doping is different. So in europium-doped LSCO, superconductivity only onsets at a higher doping. Similarly, bismuth 2201 superconductivity only onsets at around 0.1 instead of 0.05. So there's certain elements, and it may be disorder or maybe charge order that's suppressing superconductivity. Okay. All right, but in YBCO, in the NQR or NMR measurements, they found in high magnetic field a splitting of one of the copper peaks associated with the copper oxide planes, and that seemed to be some indication of charge ordering in YBCO. But a very exciting development was using resonant X-ray scattering. The Giringelli group, and I think this was first noted by Brekovich, found a Bragg peak associated with some charge density wave order in YBCO. So this is really, direct, clear evidence for some charge order in these materials. So what they found was peaks at these reciprocal lattice vectors of 0.3, so Q of 0.3, along the A axis and along the B axis, so along H and along K, and the peaks along H and along K are about equal in magnitude. So this is indicating that it's perhaps not stripe-like, it might be more of a checkerboard-like, although that's at this point not really clear. Perhaps one of the most intriguing aspects of this CDW order is to look at the temperature dependence. So this is looking at the intensity, one of these Bragg peaks at 0.3 as a function of temperature. It onsets around 160 Kelvin, peaks at the superconducting transition temperature, which in this sample is about 60 Kelvin or so, and then is suppressed below TC. So this was first seen by resonant X-ray scattering, the technique that our group specializes in. It was also seen around the same time with hard X-ray scattering. So what they were able to do with hard X-ray scattering is apply a high magnetic field of 17 Tesla, and in a low temperature in the superconducting state, they find this field enhances the CDW order. And if they map this out as a function of temperature, in zero field, you get this cusp-like temperature dependence. But if you apply 17 Tesla field, you get this curve in red, and you get this seeming recovery of the CDW order. So this is a clear indication of some sort of competition between the CDW order and the superconductivity, where the field is suppressing superconductivity and enhancing the charge density wave order.
Is it possible to estimate the amplitude of charge modulation?
I'll get to sort of what we're actually sensitive to in these two techniques, okay? So basically, in hard X-ray scattering, you're sensitive to lattice displacements, and it's a bit of an indirect measurement of a modulation in charge density. You can infer that there's some modulation of some parameter that would be affecting your atomic positions. In our resonance scattering technique, we can get some insight into what is actually modulated in space. And I'll sort of put a bit of a spoiler. It turns out that in our resonance scattering technique, we seem to be sensitive to modulations in energy and not directly a modulation in charge density. So as yet, we don't know what the charge density modulation actually is, and it could be really small.
Right. Remember, in the oxychloride system, where the modulation in the STM was dramatic, the actual number was very small.
Yeah, yeah. And again, I think it's not so clear from the tunneling spectroscopies how you go from, you know, what they measure to a charge density, right? You'd have to integrate up the spectral weight over some window to go from a differential conductance to a charge, right? Okay.
Can you remind us what the doping level is here?
So this is a doping. So in this sample, this is a ortho 8 sample, and the doping is around 1/8. Okay. So the same doping where CDW order is maximal in the length and the base cuprates. But I'll show in a bit the doping dependence of this, okay? So we got involved pretty early on in this, and we had some minimal involvement in this initial study with Giringelli. But one thing that we were a bit concerned about was that, or originally, you know, before the science paper was published, there was a bit of concern that perhaps there was some charge order in the chain layer of YBCO, and it wasn't in the copper oxide planes. So we know that some chains could potentially support a density wave order, and we also know that at an oxygen 6.75 sample, we can have an ortho 3 ordered structure where you'd get a super lattice peak at 1/3, just associated with ordering of oxygen in the chain layer. So we wanted to investigate that in that sample. We did measurements at the Canadian Light Source. This is an instrument we built with George Sawatsky at UBC. And if you're interested in experiments, you can read the reviews of scientific instruments on that. So in this sample, in YBCO, you can get different oxygen-ordered phases. And this one we're studying is an ortho 3 phase, which has, in this chain layer, a sequence of full, and empty chains. And it's somewhat short-range ordered still. So it's not as perfect as what we've shown here. So when we look at this ortho 3 ordered sample, we can change the photon energy in our experiment. And at this photon energy, I'm sensitive to the states in the chains. And at this photon energy, I'm sensitive to states in the planes. And when we vary our photon energy, I see a peak at 1/3 associated with our chain ordering. But if I go to this other photon energy, I get a peak that's at a different Q vector. And this peak is associated with the ordering in the copper oxide planes that's present along the H and K directions. And seemingly doesn't have a clear relation to what's going on in the copper oxide chain layer. Also, we can map the temperature dependence of that, and this ortho 3 peak has a weak, somewhat featureless temperature dependence, whereas this in-plane peaks at 0.3, these incommensurate peaks have this onset at 160 or so, peaking at TC and then getting suppressed in the superconducting state. So we have no clear relation between the CDW order and the structure and the material. And it seems like, at least at this doping, the CDW order is not so sensitive to the orthorhombic structure of the material, and it's not becoming commensurate with any ordering in the chain layer. So this is somewhat unexpected, because our lessons from the lanthanum-based cuprates was that structure was very important, and some tilting of the copper oxide planes wanted to drive some stripe ordering in some relation to the structure. So another thing we did in these materials is we're able to disorder the oxygen in the chain layer. And that does a couple of things. One is it changes the defect structure of the materials. And we found some surprising results that we don't quite understand. So if we go to a couple of these different dopings here, this one's ortho 5 ordered, this one's ortho 8 ordered. We heat the sample up to a temperature where the oxygen disorders, and then we quickly cool it back down to quench in that disorder. So when we can measure the same sample in an oxygen ordered phase O and a disordered phase D. So here's the oxygen ordering peaks, and here's the CDW peaks. So in these samples, the disordering the oxygen seems to decrease the peak intensity by about a factor of 2. So here in the disordered, we've subtracted the background. Here's the disordered case, and I've scaled up the peak by a factor of 1.9. And quite surprisingly, it reduces the peak intensity, but it has no effect on the incommensurability and no effect on the correlation length or the width of this peak. That's very difficult to understand. Also, if we map the temperature dependence of this, again, I've just scaled it by 1.92. I've mixed up the colors here, actually, but I've scaled it by 1.92. And there's no apparent effect on the temperature dependence. So that's also a really curious effect. And the conclusion I draw from that is that perhaps the temperature dependence and the correlation length are not set by disorder in these materials. And there's something else that's causing the short-range character of the CDW order and this really quite unusual temperature dependence that we find here. Okay, so now I just want to cover the doping dependence of the CDW order in YBCO and contrast it to what's going on, what we know of the lanthanum-based cuprates. So this was studied somewhat in just a few samples, first by Blackburn and then closely by Blanco Canosa, so the Keimer group and the Hayden group. So with hard x-rays and with soft x-rays. And as they go to lower doping, you go to an oxygen 6.5 sample, a doping around 0.1. What happens is the peak intensities seem to decrease a little bit, and the there seems to be a little bit of a breaking of symmetry. So the peak is longer along the K direction, so along the chains, than it is. It's more intense along the chains than it is perpendicular to the chains. So we got a peak along K that is maybe one quarter or one third of the peak. Peak along H, that's one third or one quarter of the peak along K. So we've also done measurements of this, looking at 6.5 sample, and we find very similar things for this 0.1 sample. And then we've gone to quite lower doping, 0.06. So this is getting very close to the non-superconductor-superconductor transition in the underdoped materials. And we still see the CDW order in this sample. Here, this is out of doping where there's now evidence for some quasi-static magnetism, anti-ferromagnetism at this doping. And here we just see a peak along K, and at least within our noise, we don't see a peak along H.
How does the ordering wave vector of the magnetism compare to that of the charge in this sample?
In this sample, the magnetism that I'm aware of being observed is at pi-pi, so it's just anti-ferromagnetic order, and there's no clear relation to this 0.34 peak that we're seeing here. So that's quite different than the lanthanum-based cuprates.
So would you think that
ultimately the magnetism is very small? Well, so I'm aware of some work by Bill Byers and Chris Stock, where what they see is a central mode at pi-pi, at this doping. At higher doping, there's slightly other things happening. But that's maybe something that needs to be investigated further. Certainly the neutron scattering was not done on this exact same sample, so we need to do some work to figure out exactly where we are in the phase diagram and what kind of magnetism we should be comparing it to. But as yet, there's no indication that there's a clear relation between the Q of the magnetism and the Q of the CDW order. Okay. So we can sketch out some phase diagrams for this CDW order. And here's our peak intensity on a log scale. It's really quite weak at this very low doping. Seems to be peaked around 1/8 and then fall off at higher doping. And that's sort of coincident with this dip in the TC versus doping in YBCO. The onset temperature, as far as we can identify it, is also peaked around 1/8 and falls off at lower and higher doping. That's similar to what's happening in the lanthanum-based cuprates, where the CDW order is maximal around TC. And then in the incommensurability, in YBCO, the incommensurability increases with decreasing doping, in contrast to the lanthanum-based cuprates, which increases with increasing doping. So these are obeying opposite trends, and that's quite unexpected, I would say. And also quite different Qs. So here we're finding Q around 0.3, whereas a big story in the lanthanum-based cuprates was having Q around this special value of 0.25. Okay? So if we sort of summarize some of these aspects of the CDW order in the different materials, in terms of dimensionality in LBCO, there's an indication that we have stripe-like order. Whereas in YBCO, it may be bidirectional at high doping and move to something more unidirectional at lower doping. there's a clear relation between spin density wave order and charge density wave order in the lanthanum-based cuprates, but not so much in YBCO. There's some very clear evidence for a structure dependence in an LBCO, but nothing that we've clearly identified in the lanthanum in YBCO. And then these incommensurabilities are displaying opposite trends in the two compounds, so indicating that 0.25 is not a special number for a charge density wave order. Aspects that are somewhat generic is a maximal intensity at least near 1/8, as far as we can tell, and also a clear competition between superconductivity and this charge density wave order. So charge order is suppressing superconductivity, and superconductivity is suppressing charge order. So I talked about YBCO and the lanthanum-based cuprates, but now, just very recently, there's reports from diffraction, soft X-ray scattering of CDW order in these other cuprates, bismuth 2212 and bismuth 2201. So now we have clear evidence for CDW order really being generic and being present in all the important families of the cuprate materials. I think that it's quite likely it's seen in the mercury compounds as well. Okay. One nice thing about these lanthanum-based cuprates is that these groups also have the ability to do very nice photo emission and tunneling spectroscopy experiments, so they can compare quite directly to those techniques. So this work by the Domicheli group at UBC, so Ricardo Coleman, a very, very bright graduate student, they map out the incommensurability versus doping for a few dopings in their materials. They can compare that to some STM measurements as well, getting similar incommensurabilities. And they note that that incommensurability matches up with connecting hot spots of the Fermi surface, so these ends of the Fermi arcs. So that's maybe a clue of where this Q is set by. It might be set by some aspect of the Fermi surface topology. And there's various theoretical developments that might be in line with that sort of picture. Okay, so now I want to switch to a little bit. So that's a lot of the phenomenology of the cuprates of the CDW order. Now I'm going to talk about some theory. So this is theory. I'm not a theorist, so this is my contribution to this is really quite minimal, and most of this is the ideas of Sabir, and he might talk about that on Thursday. But this came about due to this fine institute, so just having lunch with Sabir in the bistro, we were talking about some unusual temperature dependence, and that sparked a few ideas. Then he, a week later, he has a talk with Roger at the bistro, and they started doing some calculations, and his excellent student in the back, Lauren, did these wonderful Monte Carlo calculations. So the basic problem is that this CDW order as a function of temperature has quite an unusual temperature dependence. It has a quite gradual onset and this cusp-like behavior. And that's quite different than a regular phase transition where you'd expect something more pronounced near some transition temperature that you'd identify.
Correspondingly, there is no clear thermodynamic signal, like specifically. Am I right? Like a superconductor, you have a very good specific heat anomaly. Do you see such thermal anomalies in this?
Nothing that I'm aware of has been identified. There is some thermodynamic signature from some ultrasound experiments in YBCO indicating that at least the pseudo gap, so it might be at a higher temperature, undergoes a real phase transition. So that's some work out of a Los Alamos group. Schechter, I think, is the paper. Came out in Nature last year.
All the work that you're showing, is that the quasi-elastic peak? Or?
Yeah, so this is the Bragg peak intensity that we, the super-last peak intensity we measure with resonant X-ray scattering. So we have some finite energy resolution to our experiment. So something could be fluctuating on a certain energy scale or time scale, and we would measure that as a static peak. So how static this is, I can't say.
Is it few milli-electron volts,
Yeah, I'd want to say a few milli-electron volts. More recently, there's been some work by the Keimer group, by Le Tacon, where they do some scattering measurements with a very good energy resolution, and they can say that this peak is static to within 100 micro EV is what they've said. Okay, so 100 micro EV. In contrast, the energy scale for NMR, which doesn't see a static signature and zero field, is maybe 10 micro EV. So it could be fluctuating on this intermediate energy scale, or it could be that it goes long range ordered in high field, and that's required to really see a clear signature in NMR. These things are not yet established. Okay, but back to the story. So we've got this gradual onset and this cusp-like temperature dependence. So this reminded Sabir of a problem with the anti-ferromagnetic insulator in the cuprates and some temperature dependence there above the nail temperature. And basically, there's this idea that he attributes to Polyakov that there should be a gradual onset of intensity over a very wide range in temperature that is a consequence of angular fluctuations of some order parameter that has three or more components in two spatial dimensions. Okay, so the idea is then that this multi-component order parameter is superconductivity plus charge density wave order, and charge order with an x and a y component. Each of these orders is a complex number, so then you've got six components to an order parameter that you can construct. You can work out the symmetries of that these order parameters should have, and then write down a Ginzburg-Landau free energy for that, and then solve this free energy for solve this theory for the temperature dependence of the CDW order. And this is the Monte Carlo calculations of Lorin. So what they find is a pretty good agreement in this cusp region, giving you this gradual onset. And this is for a range of different parameters. Okay. So in the picture that we have for this temperature dependence is that at this high temperature phase above the superconducting transition temperature, what you have is basically this global or higher dimensional order parameter that's fluctuating between charge order and superconductivity, but has a finite magnitude. So this region corresponds to angular thermal fluctuations of this multi-component order parameter and not amplitude fluctuations. So that's all that's included in this model calculation is these angular fluctuations and not amplitude fluctuations.
This angular fluctuation responsible for this quite different onset compared to Mayfield theorem?
Yes, that's the idea. Okay. And then as you go to t equals zero, superconductivity wins out and sort of locks in along this superconducting axis. So that's the basic picture that we have. And then there's some deviations between the experiment and the theory, which perhaps Sabir can talk about. But this deviation may come from quench disorder in the material, causing a finite CDW order at t equals zero that wouldn't happen in the theory, or could perhaps come from quantum fluctuations being relevant and giving you finite CDW order. So the picture then that we have for the pseudo gap, this phase above superconductivity, historically there's been two predominant paradigms. One of phase fluctuating superconductivity or preformed pairs, this Kivelson-Emery idea, or of some symmetry breaking ordered phase, d-density wave, staggered flux phase, or spin and charge density wave order. So now I'd say we've got clear evidence that there's some charge density wave order in all of the cuprate materials and in the pseudo gap phase. And in this model this angular fluctuations, we'd say that elements of both of these pictures are really present. And how you should describe the pseudo gap is as a region of fluctuating superconductivity and CDW order with so a bit of the best of both worlds. We have fluctuations and we have CDW order, so maybe we can make lots of people happy, right? Okay, so how am I doing for time? I've got
50 more minutes.
Okay, so I've got 10 more minutes. Yeah.
To talk and then win.
Okay, so So I'm going to bite into my discussion time and talk about the microscopic character of CDW order. Okay, so I microscopically, there's different ways we could try and understand CDW order. In the lanthanum-based cuprates, one of the paradigms was early on was to think about charge segregation, and this was driven by a tendency for charge to want to segregate in an adoped insulator as a means to increase kinetic energy. So you get a gain in kinetic energy, and then you get some gain from having some magnetic order set in. So this is a route to stripe ordering that is coming from the charge sector. There was other descriptions, so you could have some Fermi surface nesting or some relation to Fermi surface topology, or you could have the physics of exchange interactions, some sort of valence bond solid. And in all of these instances, you'd have some modulation of charge density, you'd have structural distortions, and you'd have some modulation in the electronic structure. Conventional diffraction techniques, I mentioned this earlier, are sensitive to the lattice displacements, and then from that you'd infer some more interesting translational symmetry breaking. Both resonant X-ray scattering, the technique that I showed, what you have is a technique where the atomic scattering form factor, F, that enters into your structure factor is very energy dependent and can become strongly enhanced on a resonance and can give you additional contrast and additional insight into the microscopic character of some order. So if we look at the energy dependence of some peaks, some Bragg peaks, a structural Bragg peak might have this red shape here. A rotation of your copper oxygen octahedra would have this blue curve here. Some valence or orbital order induced by oxygen ordering in the cuprates would give us these sort of line shapes. And then if you looked at magnetites, you have different line shapes where you can distinguish orbital order and antiferromagnetic order. So basically, the energy dependence of the scattering intensity fingerprints the character of the CDW order. So this is done by going onto a resonance and choosing a resonance where you can be sensitive to the most important states in the material. So if we go to the copper L edge, for instance, we can be sensitive to transition between the core 2p electrons and the unoccupied 3d electrons, those electrons that are the unoccupied states that are they're most relevant to the cuprates. So example is looking at these oxygen-ordered samples, and if we have a full or empty chain in YBCO, the full chains would have divalent copper, and the empty chains would have monovalent copper, and we can look at a Bragg peak associated with that, and we can model that that Bragg peak, and we're very successful at doing that. So I can work out the energy dependence of the structure factor for a full chain site and an empty chain site, and look at the half zero zero Bragg peak in ortho 2 YBCO, and I get very good agreement between the measured scattering intensity and what I'd model for this modulation of valence, for instance. So now we want to look at stripes in the cuprates. So this had been done at the oxygen edge and at the copper and oxygen edge by Avamonte first, so some beautiful measurements, and by Fink, so I was involved a little bit in these measurements. And these results were interpreted as a modulation, large modulation in the copper valence and a lattice displacement of the copper. But the agreement between the model calculations and the experiment was not really good. So in purple is the model calculation, in red is the experimental scattering intensity. So we wanted to revisit that a little bit. So here's at our scattering intensity in neodymium-doped LSCO. We get this red curve, and here's X-ray absorption in purple. And basically, we model this in terms of valence modulation. That really doesn't work for the copper edge. A lattice displacement also doesn't work particularly well, so it's this curve in green. But what does work is a phenomenological model where we take our atomic scattering form factor and we give it a bit of an energy shift. So this F is our form factor, it's not the Fermi function, it's a form factor, and we give each site a plus or a minus energy shift. So I'm just taking my whole absorption or my electronic structure and I'm nudging it a bit at each site. And when I do that, I put that into our structure factor, I get this curve in black, where the only free parameter in this model is to match up the intensity at one photon energy, so just a scaling factor. I get an excellent agreement over this wide energy range. We can also do this at the oxygen edge, and also get really quite good agreement with this energy shift model for these first two pre-peaks. Here, we get a very sharp discrepancy, but I still think this is really quite good agreement. And the reason for that is that these first two peaks in our X-ray absorption, or this low energy structure at the oxygen edge, is associated with oxygen hybridized with the D states of copper. Whereas at higher energy, the oxygen are hybridized with all of the spaghetti, the lanthanum states, and all of the things that really aren't central to the physics of the copper oxide planes. So our idea then is it's just these low energy states that are shifted in energy. This same energy shift model, incidentally, works very beautifully in YBCO as well. So the same idea of what we're sensitive to in resonance scattering is energy shifts, the translational symmetry breaking of the electronic structure rather than a large change in valence. Okay. All right. 5 minutes total, including questions. So I'll just one more comment then is what I think these energy shifts really are. Okay. So my idea is that if I wanted to construct the atomic scattering form factor specific site, I could start with a copper atom, hybridize it with some oxygen, and parameterize that by some hopping and some Coulomb repulsion and some crystal field parameters, and you'd get a set of energy levels and a spectrum. Then if I just change some of those parameters by a tiny amount, say 1% or whatnot, you'd get a shift in your energy levels, and you'd get the shifts that we're seeing in our experiment. So then the model that we might have is that what we're sensitive to is a subtle modulation, a symmetry breaking in the local electronic structure, such as a variation in the hopping between the copper oxygen bonds or the hybridization between the copper and the oxygen in space, rather than a clear modulation in charge density. And in fact, the actual modulation in charge density could really be quite small and could be minimal. We have no clear evidence for a large value for the charge density modulation. Okay, so with that, I'll perhaps stop and take a couple minutes of questions.
Okay, everybody.
Density wave order correlated along the c-axis. Are there some experimental information about it?
So along the c-axis, the correlation is it's really short range, but there is maximum and minimum along L, and it's the CDW order is minimal at integer values of L, which means that CDW order on subsequent planes are perhaps out of phase. Okay.
Can you say something about whether it's side-centered or bond-centered? Or
no, we at this stage we can't distinguish site-centered versus bond-centered. So there's sort of a phase factor that we can't get out of our scattering experiment.
But from the background the physics, it's more like valence bond order, like one of the theories. So then it would be more like bond-centered.
Yeah, but I'd say those are theoretical ideas. There's nothing from our experiment that rules out site-centered order. I've been sort of trying to figure out a way to do this, and I haven't yet succeeded.
Okay, any more questions?
Sorry, one more.
Yeah.
The fact that in lanthanum copper oxide with barium doping, TC essentially goes to zero at 1/8 doping is consistent with this octahedral rotation and charge localization tendency. When it comes to YPCO, you have stiff plates. So somehow that amplitude is reduced of that spectral. Is that a correct way to understand the difference between YPCO and at 1/8 doping?
The CDW order is suppressed in YBCO, you're saying relative to the length of base cuprates? I'd say we don't know that yet. My feeling is that they're not all that different, actually. So the correlation lengths are comparable in neodymium doped lanthanum strontium copper oxide, as in YBCO. So we get about 60 angstroms at best in YBCO. In neodymium doped LSCO, we might get 70 angstroms or so for the correlation length. It's better in LBCO, where there's a more pronounced octahedral rotation. And the peak intensities aren't dramatically different. From our perspective, I would say these orders are really quite similar and are the same thing. So they're both, from our spectroscopy, they're both coming from these energy shifts. You know, they're both associated with the suppression of TC at 1/8. So there's differences, but I think essentially, you know, we should be looking for a common origin for these two orders. And that things like the structure are, you know, complications that need to be included, but are perhaps just details.
All right, well, let's thank Dave again.